Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Of course, South Africans who went to sleep a little bit earlier last night woke up to a very unnerving reality. What is the future of the President Cyril Ramaphosa? What are the implications? And what does this mean for the conference? Peter du Toit is the Assistant Editor at News 24. Thanks for joining us, Peter. How are you?
Good. Thanks, Howard. Morning to you and your listeners.
Did you get any sleep last night?
Yeah, look, I know we got some sleep in. Look, it's a precarious moment that we're in. We have been here before, obviously, in September 2008 when Thabo Mbeki was removed, to a lesser extent in December 2015 when Nhlanhla Nene, Minister of Finance, was fired, which led to a massive political crisis. And then, of course, in February 2018 when Jacob Zuma was removed by Cyril Ramaphosa and friends. So it's a precarious political moment, and a lot of uncertainty today, and a lot of uncertainty about how this might play out.
So let's just look at that, because the reaction, my reaction, and it's a very personal feeling. And it seems to reflect a lot of what our listeners are saying, is there's not very much confidence within the ANC, but there is some kind of a confidence or some kind of a appreciation that Cyril Ramaphosa really has been trying to remove corruption, maybe too slowly, maybe he hasn't done a great job, maybe. But we also know that Arthur Fraser, who represents the Zuma faction, exploded this bomb in order to remove him, to get the Mkhizes back into this seat. It's almost better the devil you know. It's almost this feeling of, surely it would have been better to, after December, create a stronger ANC in terms of the Ramaphosa group, and then if he needed to be removed, remove him. But now it seems to just be an open, anything can happen.
You know, look, Howard, you've summed it up very well. Ramaphosa, you know, the first year, I think he launched a couple of initiatives to try and roll back the effect of state capture and corruption. I mean, he appointed various commissions of inquiry, changed the heads of institutions at the NPA and SARS and the like. So I think he started off semi-brightly. But, you know, it's undeniable that, unfortunately, you know, there has been a lack of urgency by him and those around him to really take the challenges that we've got, like Eskom, for example, by the scruff of the neck and really sort it out. You know,
absolutely.
Stuff like that simply has not happened, one of the consequences of that, one of the consequences of his leadership style, both in government and in the governing party, has been that his opponent, his political opponents, of which there are many, and who are vicious, have been allowed to repeatedly regroup and refocus their efforts to try and topple him. You mentioned Arthur Fraser; he's one of the most significant figures in our post-1994 landscape, who you've never heard of. But he was allowed to keep on operating after Ramaphosa became president. And even though Ramaphosa knew how toxic Fraser is, you know, so his opponents were allowed to keep on doing their nefarious deeds and keep on regrouping and keep on strengthening themselves. And that was an absolutely fatal mistake by Ramaphosa. So the enemies that are now circling, that are now getting ready to eject Ramaphosa, and look, there's a real possibility that that might happen. There's a possibility that by the end of the, there's a possibility that when the National Assembly meets next Tuesday, you know, we might be seeing a caretaker president being elected like we saw in 2008. And I have to say that everyone who is positioning themselves to replace Ramaphosa are remnants of state capture, you know, represent state capture 2.0. I mean, the quality of human capital that can replace Ramaphosa and his cabinet is ghastly. I mean, there's, you know, we're going to see the return of people like Nombula Mokonyane and Patapile Tlambini, you know, as William Kige is making a return, trying to make a return. Paul Mashatile, who wants to be deputy president, is considered colloquially to be the leader of the so-called Alex Mafia. I mean, these are the guys that look set to take over the government of our country. And people around Ramaphosa are very open and clear about the fact that if this broad RET faction axis takes over, it will be state capture 2.0 because they will just start stealing and looting. And that's what we're staying, that's the barrel that we're staring down. So it's a very precarious moment that we're in. And something that I'm very concerned about.
Is there a way for Ramaphosa and his cohorts to force a national election?
So it's not all lost for Ramaphosa. The report by the independent panel is not binding,
right.
and does not carry no legal force. So okay. There's no, it will not necessarily lead to any criminal and or parliamentary investigation. It can, it probably should, but it doesn't necessarily have to happen. The National Assembly is supposed to meet next Tuesday, where they're supposed to consider the report, and it's quite conceivable that the NA can pass a motion which says which thanks the panel for their work and takes note of the report and then buries it.
Right.
The ANC still has a majority in the National Assembly, and if Ramaphosa can come out on top of the meeting of the ANC's national executive, which starts at 7 tonight, that means that he will be able to give marching orders or a line of march to the parliamentary caucus, which means that they can shelve the report come Tuesday. That's a possibility. If, however, he comes up short today in the NEC, if there is a groundswell of opposition that says he needs to step aside in terms of the ANC's notorious step-aside rule, which saw the end of 8th Magashule, then things might be difficult for it. The ANC will do everything that it can to prevent an early election. So what will probably happen is that the ANC will ask Ramaphosa to resign, as they did Thabo Mbeki in 2008. His vacancy will then be filled from the benches of the ANC and ANC caucus in the National Assembly. It's quite possible that they then send Paul Mashatile or Zwelin Mkhize or Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma back to Parliament, where from that individual will be elected as president up until the next election. So I think the prospects for an early election is unlikely. I think the ANC will prevent that. And we like we saw in 2008, could see a caretaker president being elected. I don't think it's going to be David Mabuza. He has almost no constituency left in the ANC. He has been wholly anonymous over the last couple of years and completely inefficient and ineffective. So his election as a caretaker president will not have any credibility. They'll want someone there to stabilize things, and Mabuza won't be the guy. So we're going to have to look at someone like Mashatile or Mkhize or even Dlamini-Zuma. Yeah. But that will all play out over the next 24 to 72 hours. Hold onto your seat.
Right, absolutely. And I guess, ironically, if you had a couple of $1 million to keep under your sofa, that now would be a good time to keep them, right?
Absolutely. Look, let's not make any rash decisions.
No, absolutely not.
I think we need to be very clued up and plugged into whatever process is going to start unfolding from today. We do understand that Ramaphosa will be fighting back very strongly.
So, well, that is, I guess that is good. So then why would the opposition parties be cheering this on and clapping their hands in glee? We will be speaking later on the show to Herman Mashaba. I know I spoke to John Steenhuisen this morning. They're in a shadow cabinet meeting as we speak. But to what end?
Look, they want to force political change. I mean, that's what they want. This is an existential crisis for the ANC. This is a crisis for the country. This is obviously an opportunity for political parties to help on and accelerate political change.
Mm.
That's what they want. There is a strong argument to be made that the country probably needed a crisis like this to help change come more quickly and more faster. And this might be that opportunity. So there's no doubt that opposition parties will try and exploit this as far as they can. There's obviously big division in the ANC. There's serious eruptions in the governing party. Look, the ANC is not a united organization
absolutely.
In 2008 when Mbeki was removed from power. This is a deeply divided organization.
And this could fracture the ANC completely.
Political parties will exploit this because they want to see political change, they want to see accelerated political change, and this is an opportunity to try and make sure that change comes quicker than it might probably come through the ballot box.
Yeah, and the interesting thing as well is, ironically, without Ramaphosa, I would imagine that if we went to the polls today, they would probably drop below 30%.
Look, Ramaphosa has always been much more popular than the ANC itself. Ahead of the previous election, I think there was a 15 percentage point difference between the popularity of Ramaphosa versus the popularity of the party. That has since dropped to 48 for Ramaphosa and 40 for the ANC. If Ramaphosa goes, expert analysts tell us that it's quite possible that they can go far below 50, and some even say this has below 40. So this is not good for the ANC's electoral prospects.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That's a card that Ramaphosa has to play. Is if it becomes too difficult, he pushes the ANC somehow towards an early election. If he does,
look, that's a card you could play in a functional political party or in a functional democracy.
Right.
In the ANC, ANC politics is not about the national interest. ANC politics is not about doing what's good for the country. It's about protecting factional interests, and it's about protecting the interests of certain extraction networks. That's what it's about. So if it was about the ANC prospects of 2024 and beyond, if decisions in this party were taken based on attempts to try and resuscitate, reform, or repair the party, things would have gone much differently. But that's not the driving motive force behind decision-making in the ANC. The driving and motive forces behind decision-making in the ANC is the maintaining of networks of extraction. It's the maintaining of the status quo around certain factions, and it's about protecting certain factional interests. It's not about the national interest, and I think in many cases it's not even about ANC interests. So don't expect decisions being taken with the health of the party in mind.
So neither the health of the party nor the health of the country. But to some extent, and maybe the point that you made, that maybe this is the crisis that we've needed in order to finally force change, because it's
absolutely
very, very obvious that...
Look, it's going to be turbulent. Yes, you're right. It will be very turbulent, and that's what we don't want. We don't need that. Mm. No, we are a fragile state. That's just a matter of fact. So we don't need the instability that we will now, the period of instability that we're now going to be entering into. And it's very clear that we don't have sufficient strong political leadership to be able to guide us through this. We are now, as citizens, going to be subjected to endless internecine ANC battle to protect factional interests. And that's very distressing.
It is indeed, but let's hope that the good people, the good decisions, will prevail, and that this will be the political crisis, maybe, that we've needed. We didn't ask for, but maybe that will have a positive outcome. Peter du Toit, thank you for a very, very robust and detailed conversation about this incident. That's Peter du Toit, assistant editor at News 24.